You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from New York City. I am Chet Siegel. I was a guest on the last episode. But today I'm the host and I'm terrified. Just kidding. I feel great.
You're
and
really messing it
I'm
up.
I'm fucking up left and right.
Impisode? What is that?
Well, we're just two little imps talking shop. It's an impisode.
Aww.
Made my mistake work for me because that's improv, baby.
See, an organic mistake can lead to a beautiful
scene. Oh, like those SUNY Weavers, right? That passage that's in Truth and Comedy. Anyway, I got to finish this intro before we get into it. My guest today, you've already heard his beautiful voice. It's the wonderful Jeff Hiller, who improv fans might know from literally fucking everything. right now in New York, he plays with The Curfew on Friday evenings. He also plays with the incredibly wonderful musical improv team Baby Wants Candy, and also with Rumpelteazer, another excellent improv team, a musical improv team in New York. So welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Jeff Hiller.
Thank you.
You have an incredible list of credits. Like you're a very established improviser from New York and LA, and you also have like a very impressive theater resume. I personally am geeked out the most that you were in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
Oh yeah, I was.
Which is a wonderful, wonderful play off Broadway and on Broadway. It's insane.
Yes.
So mazel.
Well, merci. That's what you say to mazel, right?
Yeah, that's what the French say to the Jews. They say
good.
Merci.
Mazel.
Great. And on TV, you've appeared all over the place. You've been on 30 Rock. You've been on MTV's Boiling Point. You've been on Hulu's Hot Wives series. Recently, you're on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. A credit that many would overlook, I think, unfortunately, is you were on my favorite soap opera, Guiding Light.
I was totally into Guiding Light, too.
Because that's a CBS.
Exactly.
Those were my stories. Well, my mother's stories that
okay.
I inherited.
And you watched it, right?
Yes, I loved it.
Do you know that
it got crazy.
Billy Lewis is played by Chelsea Clark's father?
Shut the fuck up.
I will not.
Oh, my God. I remember being so sad when it went off the air. Just soaps are not respected anymore.
See, when I first started getting TV work, I would always get on a show that was, like, immediately canceled. I'm, like, on the last season of so many shows. And then I killed Guiding Light, which had been on the air for, like, literally 50 years.
Yeah, well, literally they killed themselves as soon as they started, like, taking all that, like, passions heat and started doing magic shit. That was when any soap opera signed their death warrant as soon as they started doing magic shit.
It's so true. Because then the stakes, there's no stakes.
Yeah.
Anything can happen if you can bring back a dead person.
It's true. Then it doesn't matter. It used to be we need a body and then they're fucking dead.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
How long were you on Guiding Light? Did you have a reoccurring character? I know this is about long form improv, but
we're going to get there. We're going to get there.
We'll get there. We're going to take the long form road.
I was only on 3 episodes. I played a tailor, and every time I was on, I would do some sort of gay panic joke where one of the male characters would be like, "Hey, that's stop touching my junk," and I'd be like, "I'm getting your inseam," and then I would like,
"Oh my,"
you know, disappear in a pink fog of gay dust.
That's how all men exit camera.
Exactly. Yeah,
they only evaporate into gay pink dust.
There we are.
Excellent, awesome. So, I just want to talk a little bit about how did you start doing improv? Where? Tell me a bit about
your
training.
Yes. Oh, I so distinctly, like so clearly, remember I was a theater major in college, and I theater and theology. Anyway, it was a small program. The point is. There was not an improv group there, mm-hmm. but somebody started talking one, and I was like, no, let's not do it. I don't know how to do improv. Mm.
And that was, that is so funny.
I just said no. Isn't that crazy?
They were starting it, and you're like, nah.
I know. I broke the first rule, and it made everything. So that's a rule for long-form improv. Say yes. Say yes.
Say yes. Just say yes.
But so I said no. And then I moved to Denver because I was an AmeriCorps volunteer mm-hmm. for a bit. And a friend of mine who was another volunteer had done improv in college. And she was too scared to go to the audition by herself. So she said, just come to the audition and think of it as like getting out of your box. And I went and I was like, I am great at this. But it was short form, and it was, like, really bad. I mean, it wasn't, just in case they ever listen, but it wasn't terrible. It's just it was short form, and so I was, like, I did a lot of, like, pop culture-y, like, puns and things like that.
Oh, that wins in short form. Yeah. You were just playing the game.
I know, but guess what their name was? We were in Denver.
Okay.
And their name was called Mile High Larity.
Yikes.
So probably my pun was on game.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. It sounds like it was fucking required.
Exactly.
Great. And also, so you were, I know this from your wonderful website, HillerTime.com. Were a social worker for a period of time. Is this what you were doing through AmeriCorps?
Yeah. I say AmeriCorps. It was actually like a Christian-y thing where we just got an AmeriCorps grant.
Oh.
But we all lived in community. Like in a commune, in a house, 10 of us.
I've never heard that phrase, we lived in community. Mm-hmm. It's like a way you don't scare your parents by saying you're in a commune. It's like the parent-safe phrasing.
Exactly.
It's in community.
Actually, it was, we practice intentional community here.
Motherfucker.
So like every Monday we would have dinner together. It was actually quite beautiful.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah. I mean, and there's a reason it's utopic, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Except for I had just come out as gay. I don't know if you realized.
You did appear from pink dust. You emerged. There was a small, glittery spark in the corner
exactly.
of the sound booth.
Or my girlish Betty Rubble giggle.
Betty Rubble giggle.
Exactly. But anyway, so when I was gay, and so they were not. There were a couple really conservative Christians in there. So it was the intentional community was a little rough.
They had other intentions.
Exactly.
<for you>.
Exactly. but yeah, so I was a social worker, but I was doing short form improv at night.
Ooh.
And then I was so in love with doing improv that I moved to New York to go to NYU to get my master's in social work.
Oh, wow.
And I got here on June 1st, and on June 2nd, I signed up for a class at the UCB because a guy in Denver was like, you should check out the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. They're the cool ones.
What a good tip. What a hot tip.
Truly, I keep thinking about him and how Eric Barone, who runs the Bovine Metropolis in Denver, Colorado, I haven't spoken to him since the year 2001, but God bless you, Eric
From
Barone.
From your lips to his ears.
Yes.
Mr. Barone, you've given us the gift of Jeff Hiller.
It's true. I would not have done, I would have been too scared, or I don't know what I would, I just wouldn't have even known about it. I didn't watch the show because I didn't have cable because I was living in a commune.
Right, of course. Intentionally living in a commune
exactly.
as opposed to accidental community living.
Exactly, which does happen.
Yeah, those are called abductions. So who was teaching when you first started taking classes?
I'm crazy old. Like, the reason that you were like, oh, you've done so much is because I've been here for 15 years.
That's not that long.
It is compared to most people. Of course, now
yes.
I'm teaching and people
are
like...
Well, no, because now people are
when
like...
When I was born in 1996, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, now there's like fucking 10-year-olds doing improv. I'm the funniest kid in my day camp, you know?
I know. I know.
Insane.
It's such a hack thing to complain about your age, but oh, my God, it's so scary.
No, I understand. You may have noticed this from my high-pitched voice and lack of authority. I'm a woman, so I too am... I too feel the pressure of age. I'm on my mom calls it the wrong side of 25.
Of 25? Oh,
I
God.
Know, right? I've been dying since that day. But so it's been 15 years since June
yes.
1st.
Yes. I took
it. Yeah, wow.
My first class started June. Like, see, back then you could just go and sign up, and a class would start in a week or two, and it would still be open, and it wasn't a hard thing.
Right.
But it was also before Twitter. So
right.
Like...
Which is now how people get into classes.
Exactly.
They get a Twitter alert.
That's what my students
Fuck.
Told me.
Yeah, they wake up because there's a handle. Like yeah. It used to be classes or something. They alert you when it—
See, that's when you're like, oh, social media is good.
Yeah, it is.
Because I'm always afraid of it, but it's good. It's good.
Me too.
Anyway, so I went down, I took a class, and I was in a class with Sean Conroy, who was a member of The Swarm.
Oh, magical.
And now he lives in L.A. Everybody lives in L.A. Mm-hmm. He is a TV writer and stuff. And he later told me that the worst class he ever taught in his entire, like, decade of teaching classes was my class.
Oh.
I know. We had a crazy class.
What, because I think a
and
crazy class
no
now
one.
Might be a little different than a crazy class when
yeah,
I've
it was
also,
more like
I've
the
also
Wild
been impressing
West
for like
then.
10 years now, so I started a little young.
You're on the wrong side of 25.
I know. I spent this morning picking out my plot. I want something nice by the river.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
Yeah, but if there's a flood, you might be swept away.
You know, then it was really my time, my second time.
Good
when
for
the
you.
Flood took me.
Good
Thank
for you.
You. But what were the wackadoos then? Because now it's probably like there's an asshole frat kid. There's, you know, like the archetypes may have changed a little bit.
Right, right. There was just a lot of people who were like beautifully wild, but uncontainable. Does that make sense?
Like a Breakfast Club of...
Yeah, we were motley. And... Yeah, and that was before there was, like, a curriculum and stuff, too. So it was, like, it was confusing. But I do remember, I remember being in a scene, and I lit some candles on a table.
Very nice object work.
Thank you. And that's so funny that you say that, because I shook the match out, you know, after I did
it. That really gets improv nerds wet.
Oh,
that really does.
I love good object work.
Oh.
I am such a stickler about it in my classes,
really?
Too. Ugh, I'm always like, that was not holding a dress. That was like weirdly holding a,
yeah.
I don't know. Or like my really big pet peeve is when people drink and, how do I describe it to people who can't see this? Like they drink, they put the hand in a fist and then they just punch their mouth with their fist. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I cannot
when they just bring it,
stand
like,
it. Yeah.
Like, it does look like they're, because they think they're holding a handle, but they're not actually tilting
exactly.
a glass up and sipping a liquid.
Or they think they're holding like the stem of a wine goblet,
mm-hmm.
which like that's, if you ever have wine out of like a wine glass, it's
right.
so rare you would be holding just the stem.
Yeah.
Most people would hold the thing.
The actual
and
thing, yeah.
I get it if it's like a choice where you're holding like a brandy sifter with your two fingers like you're
yeah.
a professor or something, but when they're just
like
a
that.
Normal person holding the stem, it bugs me so much because it just looks like they're hitting their mouth.
Yeah. And what is it about...
And also, if you have a glass, there's like...
It's
there's
gonna hurt you.
Matter here, so you can't just touch your hand to your mouth. You have to feel the glass.
No,
and, like,
that'd be a really
it.
Weird handle.
Totally. And I feel like whenever you do bad object work, people in the audience are like, wait, what's happening? What's he doing? Oh, he's drinking. And it took them so long to figure out mm-hmm. that you were just drinking a glass of wine
yeah.
that they, like, have no idea what's happening in the scene. And you've lost them. And you've
yeah.
lost, like, precious, precious laughs.
It's true. It's all about protecting precious, the laughter.
Exactly.
The precious, precious sweet baby laughs.
Exactly.
Is there...
John Gabriel Sidibe.
Yes.
See, there's my pop culture stuff. I can't help
you
it.
You can't Chet. Help
it's
it.
It's a real weakness.
Your short-form past is coming to haunt you.
I know.
But, you know, if you're gonna like, I guess, what is it called when you name check somebody? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You name check? Gabriel Sidibe is a good one.
That's true. It's not
it's not a
low-hanging fruit.
No,
it's like,
no.
It's a little...
She's very versatile. Let's
she
just
is.
Give a
She's
minute.
She's been in everything.
She's been in a lot. She's had a lot of really great small roles in everything.
I know. I would love her career.
Oh, me too. We'll never have it.
No.
But we'll have our own, and you have a lovely one.
it'll do.
It'll do. So are you solely UCB trained, or have you trained at any other improv theaters?
Well, I trained very briefly at the Bovine Metropolis in Denver.
Right.
Where I met Eric Barone.
Oh, again, from your lips to his ears. What a gem.
But he actually, I think he started at Second City, so...
So he was bringing knowledge from
yeah,
from
or maybe even I.O. It was sort of a long-form thing. It wasn't about Harold, but it was more long-formy mm-hmm. stuff than short-form.
It was introducing it to you.
Right, but really, it was all about UCB. And I, like everyone who sort of quote-unquote makes it, I, like, got bit by the bug, and yeah. I was, you know, I was in four rehearsal groups.
Oh,
and,
my God.
You know.
Who were some of your early coaches?
They're all, like, wildly famous now.
That's great. That's a...
Yeah.
I
Paul
wish that for all
Scheer.
Of them. Oh, motherfucker.
Let's see. Matt Walsh coached us.
What?
Isn't
your
that
practice
crazy?
Group? Oh, my
not
God.
Not my practice group. He subbed some classes.
Okay.
Jamie Denbo was
oh,
a teacher
okay.
who's now, you know, like, Rona and Beverly. Who else? Oh, I had Julie Brister. Do you know Julie Brister?
I'm sorry that I don't. I'm
oh,
sure
you'd love her. You'd truly love her. People in L.A. right now are going, oh, I love her. I love her.
Oh, you know, honestly, that isn't that all we want out of life is for someone in L.A. to say after they hear your name, oh, I love her.
Yes.
Oh, I love her.
It's so true.
Oh,
it's so true.
The least sincere love sound.
It's so true. Yeah.
But yeah.
But I also had people that you know, like Will Hines.
Yeah.
Billy Merritt. Do you know Billy
yes,
Merritt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I've very nervously tried to talk to him in backstage situations at Del Close Marathons because he's so cool.
Oh, my God. He's like someone who will
jovially.
Yeah.
He warmly greets
yeah.
that. Yeah.
He's the best. He makes yeah. people feel very comfortable,
yeah.
which I really appreciate.
Yeah. It's a nice thing. So so you did a bunch of practice groups. And what was your first Herald team?
My first Herald team was called Police Chief Rumble.
Great name. Classic
really?
Improv name. It's like, right? Like, it's a little bit of a word jumble.
Yeah. We ended up calling ourselves PCR just because it is, like, very difficult to get out all of those words.
Like PC Richards?
Yes. PC Richards. We were, on the side, we sold refrigerators.
Oh, great. You know, getting space practice space to practice in is very expensive.
It's so true. So we just got a lot of the boxes and
yeah.
we made our own studio. It had also wildly famous people on it.
I love that you're like in some way ashamed of that. That's so cool.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes you do feel like, oh, everyone else is doing so great. And
you are also doing great.
Thank you, Chet. Thank you.
Let's remind everyone of these. You were just
right.
on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, God, isn't that show so good?
It's incredible.
There's all sorts of UCB people who write for it, too.
Oh,
and you
yeah.
can tell that they were trained in improv and, like, go to weird places.
They do. And
like,
they just
obviously
support
have...
that weird idea. Instead of, like, letting it get bogged down with a straight man, it's
yeah.
just like, actually, let's just make this the world's issue and
oh,
blow it out.
I love it. I love it. I love that when she, like, was... there was that one episode where she was, like, a pole dancer.
Oh,
and she
yes.
was, like, really good at pole
yes.
dancing. I was like, ah, that's so... brilliant. I love that they just made this weird choice.
And instead of, so many times people will make the choice, the automatic, and I think it happens in improv scenes too, where like, the funny part of this is that I'm bad at it, instead
yeah.
of just trying your damnedest.
Yes.
Because you're going to be bad at it a little bit, but to watch someone commit is so much better than watch someone undersell themselves.
I've been doing ASCAT a lot lately, and...
Again, mazel.
Mercy. And I find that because you're playing with people that you don't necessarily play with every single week,
mm-hmm.
that you're constantly sort of surprised by the moves that people
yeah.
are making. But they're all, like, really good people, so it's never
of
like
you're never surprised
in a bad way.
Yeah.
But, like, so many times, I love it when someone makes just, like, a rant, mm-hmm. a one-off comment, and then you follow this weird tag out where
yeah.
you're following, like, you're just saying yes, that
yeah.
really was true, and, like—
You're just following that mistake or misstep or
yeah,
hiccup.
Yeah, which it wasn't even a mistake. It was, I don't know, like it was like a, justification for something else
mm-hmm.
crazy or whatever. And so then we follow for some reason, I think because of the form of ASCAT,
mm-hmm.
you do it in a way that's really chasing
mm-hmm.
this weird, funny thing.
Yeah, and everybody
so
knows
up.
It's a monologue deconstruction. There's no one out there who doesn't know that's listening
oh,
to this.
Right.
If you're listening to this and you don't know what ASCAT is, get to school, fuckos.
Yeah, you're not much of an improv nerd.
Exactly. But it is an aggressive montage. Like, you're attacking game and blowing things out very
right,
very
and there's
quickly.
This sort of unspoken rule about ASCAT, too, that you're because you know everyone who's playing on it
mm-hmm.
is
good. Big boys.
You can kind of, I don't want to say fuck with each other, but, like, kind of fuck with each other.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, like, fuck with each other in, like, a fun...
You can tell that when you're watching it, too.
Yeah, like, really chasing down a
challenging
game in,
each
like,
other.
This bizarre way.
That's
yeah.
great. I also want to talk a bit about when did musical improv start for you? When did you start doing that? Because I know now there are musical improv classes and it's a little bit more structured and there are programs, but you're in the wild west in musical improv.
It's so true.
And you do have such a strong theater background. How did that sort of movement start, and where's your role in it, sir?
Sir? Why is that? It's an H joke.
No, it was a reverence joke.
I'm on the wrong side of 35. You're right. There were no classes. Mm-hmm. Oh, if there had been, I would have taken 1,000 of them. I'm still thinking, like, maybe I'll take Eric Gerson's musical improv class.
He's great.
Even though I'm, like, on a team with him doing musical improv. Mm-hmm. But I just love it. Like, sometimes we'll do rehearsals for Rumpelteazer, and I'm like, wee, this is so fun. Because it is sort of, like, people are always so impressed with musical improv, but really it's just...
I think it's the most impressive thing in the world.
See,
honestly.
I kind of feel like, I hope this isn't me shitting on anybody, but I do feel like it's a little bit of a party trick that, that like, once you kind of get into the groove of it, it's... Mm-hmm. I guess it's sort of like when people come to see you do improv and they're like...
Yeah.
Nothing was made up. Seriously, nothing. And you're like, no, nothing was made up. I'm just good.
Yeah.
But anyhow, Baby Wants Candy always came to the marathon every single year, the Del Close Marathon. Mm-hmm. If you don't know about that, you guys, Google
If you don't know
improv.
What ASCAT is and you don't know what the Del Close Marathon is, honestly, go fuck yourself and just go be an accountant.
We are really alienating our audience.
You know what? We gotta put them off and then we gotta win them back.
Ooh, it's like a self-made challenge.
We've got an art. This
so
is not
first
just
of
a
all,
podcast.
We think you're assholes. Now, we're gonna try and get you back.
Yeah. Oh, what a courtship.
So I watch Baby Wants Candy all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I met some people in my level 3 class that were doing a musical. And I did that musical. And then that musical led to another musical and blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh.
And when you say doing a musical, you mean like an improvised musical or?
No, they were doing a scripted musical.
Oh.
And I just got into the musical theater world. Mm-hmm. And so people saw that I was doing musical theater.
They knew you had the skill set.
Yeah. And they knew I was an improviser because I was on Harold Knight. And so they said Baby Wants Candy needed a sub for the marathon. And they were like, do you know anybody who's like musical improv savvy? And since there were no musical improv teams at that time, like literally none. There's so many now, but there were none then.
Absolutely none.
Which is crazy. Like just seeing how this theater has changed, it's insane. Truly for the better. But so I remember Eli Newell recommended me and I was so starstruck. Mm. Also because, like, Jack McBrayer was playing.
Yeah.
I think he was already on 30 Rock, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe it was before he was on 30 Rock. Anyway, he was fancy to me.
Yeah. There's also improv fancy and then to everyone else fancy. Like,
exactly.
A lot of these people, before they were famous, were shiny to us.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it's Tammy Sager, oh, my God, before all of the accolades, you know?
Oh, my God, I saw her. I, like, took a trip to Chicago just to see Second City, and she was... Like
in the cast
at that time. And I was like, wow. I love her. And then like when she moved to New York, I was like, I know her. Anyway, and then I was really creepy. No, I wasn't.
So you sat in with them.
So I sat in with them and they were like, that was great. Will you sit in the next few shows? And I was like, yes, totally.
Awesome.
And then they started doing regular shows in New York, not just at the marathon. For like a couple of years, they had like an off-Broadway run. Mm-hmm. And so I sat in and I did shows with Peter Gwynn and Becky Drysdale, Nicole Parker,
amazing.
All these like really amazing, insane improvisers. Colleen McHugh, who is like this downtown cabaret performance artist, who like she and Nicole Parker, they're both great improvisers, but they're also like Nicole Parker played Elphaba.
Yeah.
In
no,
Wicked.
That is...
Like, girl can sing.
Yeah. She got
like,
some pipes.
For real. And Colleen is this cabaret superstar. Mm-hmm. And they one time sang a duet together. I was on stage for the duet. I was playing like, I don't know, somebody who was like their, I don't know who, like their brother or something. And I was just like so taken in by the fact that they were improvising in this perfect harmony and they like saw the words that were coming and they guessed the words and like one would set up a rhyme and they would do the same rhyme. And I played with Eliza Skinner, who's like
she's
this insane.
She's amazing. I'm obsessed. Oh, I used to
she's
watch.
Amazing. She's
gonna be I Eat Pandas or
yes,
oh,
I Eat Pandas.
Oh my god, that was in with Glennis McMurray.
Yes.
Oh my god, they yeah. that I mean. Honestly, like, there's something insane about musicals in general. Like, watching large groups of people sing at all is, I think,
it's
moving.
It's so true. It's beautiful.
Well, I did take one musical improv class with Tara Copeland.
Yes.
When she first started teaching them in general. Mm-hmm. And she was saying, like, that she was telling us that you've got to get... In musicals, it's you start singing because you can't speak anymore. The emotion yeah. has gotten so big that you have to express it in song.
Right.
So it's they're already you're already in a more heightened state emotionally. So
right.
of course everything is gonna be like affect the audience more.
Exactly. Although there are those times in where you have you so you've done musical improv
a little bit, yeah.
So you know those scenes where you're like, you know that a song is about to come, but you haven't
found the game or something yet. And then like the accompanist will like zing you. You'll say some fucking line, and then all of a sudden they underscore it. It's like, this is a song about bologna sandwiches.
Exactly.
Fuck my life.
But there's something so great about that too, because then you can be like, oh, I'm going to just make this. I'm going to think of every single specific I can mm-hmm. think of about bologna sandwiches and what bologna sandwiches mean as like a bigger metaphor for life and why bologna sandwiches would mean something to me as this weird character.
It forces you to do that.
Yeah. And
so what are, this is a great segue. So like when you hear that sting underneath you and you know a song is upon you, what
yeah.
are, so you're thinking of specifics, you're thinking mm-hmm. of how you're, as the character, are affected by this thing.
Yes.
What else are you, like goes into coming up with and living
well,
in a song?
Right. For me, for musical improv, I'm not only an improv nerd, mm-hmm. like all of you out there. See, now I've endeared myself.
Oh, brought him back. Oh.
But I am also a musical theater nerd.
Ooh.
Hardcore. And so I know a lot of musical theater stuff. And so for me, because I've been doing musical improv for 12 years or so, mm-hmm. I really love to play with genre.
Ooh.
Yeah, like, so I love to do, like, okay, this is going to be like, I know this is a song about bologna sandwiches,
uh-huh.
but I'm going to make it seem like I'm singing Mein Herr from Cabaret.
Ooh.
I'm going to get a chair out. I'm going to pivot around and do all this stuff. Anytime there's a big group number, I'm like, uh-huh. how can I make this Les Mis like? It's usually just waving a flag. That's a bit cheap at this point. But I love, like, one time I forced people to do like a standing on the lip of the stage song like Seasons of
yeah.
Love. I love doing that. I love playing with like the what has become a trope of musical theater mm-hmm. and playing with that in improv. But then also the crazy thing is, like with Magic To Do, which is the team I play with in LA, mm-hmm. we don't do a narrative structure. We do a montage of scenes that go into
That's
songs.
That's lovely.
Yeah. You know, you do callbacks and stuff, but it's not a narrative. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Rumpelteazer and Baby Wants Candy,
those are narrative
like,
shows.
Exactly.
You're watching an actual musical unfold.
Exactly. So it's a very different, like with Magic To Do, it's very much just like regular improv, where it's like, what's the game?
Mm-hmm.
And let's just play it now with song.
Right.
You know? So the game is everything I do is great and everything you do is shit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just sing a song
about that.
About how I'll do all this great stuff, and then I'm going to bump it over to you, and you're going to be like, I took a poop in my shoe, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. It's an awful thing I do. I go through shoes like I should be going through toilet paper.
I mean, this is not just an improv problem for you, Chet.
No. Doesn't art mirror life and life mirror art?
A narrative form, you just have to be like, how can I shove the want of the main character?
Mm.
How can I introduce conflict? Which is such a different beast than mm-hmm. normal improv.
When you're, but I already, like, I think it's changing, for me at least, you're shifting a misconception I had about it. Because for me, for when I'm thinking about, like, doing a narrative improv mm-hmm. show, I'm thinking about plot and a mm-hmm. lot, which is, and I like the way that you're framing it as, like, plot through my character's want, like pushing a want. What is the major obstacle,
because,
which is going to give you the conflict?
And also, every time you try and plan a plot, because it is so,
it's hard not to
detail
yeah.
and stuff like that. What's perfect plot in your head is like not what's happening in your scene mm-hmm. partner's head, and so you have to just work together. And so you know, usually with a narrative mm-hmm. structure, at the end you'll have little callbacks that set up a weird ending. And I love to play with, like, doing, like, a depressing ending or doing, like, something where you're like, oh, you think the girl's going to finally get the boy. And then it turns out the boy is, like, a robot or whatever.
Great. Love that. This is the story of so many of our lives, ladies.
Exactly.
Yes. We get the boy. The boy's a robot and capable of love.
All right. But so I don't have to worry about doing that sort of thing. I just want to worry about, like, what does my characters want? What does my scene partners want? And how can we make that grow as opposed to how can we wrap this up?
Got it.
Because sometimes also when you think about plot, you end up wrapping it up at, like, three quarters of the way through the show.
And then you're like, too tidy.
Yeah. Then you're like, oh, we've got, like, you know, 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Exactly.
That part isn't so great. But with magic to do with where it's like
with montage style.
You get to just have fun, like, calling back weird stuff that happened at the beginning of the show or whatever.
Oh, that's super fun.
Yeah.
And so right now you perform with The Curfew. So you do the singing improv and you do the talkies. do you feel yourself going into different modes or mindsets? Do you find that you lean more into style and archetype and tropes when you're doing musical improv and less so in your in your I hate to call it normal because I what a an un-PC word. What is normal?
Thank you for not calling it straight improv.
What a heteronormative patriarchy we are in.
It's so hard. I think for me, I rarely am thinking, like, maybe just because I've been doing it for 15 years, I'm rarely thinking, like, what's a trope I can do right now? You know what I mean? It's much more just gut stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, because Rumpelteazer, we play sort of, we don't have a regular, we're not a weekly show, and The Curfew is a weekly show, I have really been sort of surprisingly so, like, really getting into just being teammates.
That's great.
Yeah, because in L.A., I was on several teams, but people's schedules are so crazy in L.A., and people would always be gone, and you'd always be sitting in with subs or have just, like, you know, two people that are on the team and five other people.
Right.
But with The Curfew, we're pretty consistent, and I've really just been getting into, like, okay, I'm hooking in and playing with my team. And you know when you first start a team? I don't know. You just joined a weekend team too. Like when you join a team that's already there, there's that, like, because improv is so much about chemistry and about...
And familiarity.
Exactly.
And
knowing sort of like, oh, I know you play this way and you play that.
Right.
Not to put anybody in a box, but, like, it feels good.
Yeah.
And it was so scary to join that team, even though it was, like, people I knew and had known for 10 years.
They own this, they have this ensemble together, and you're coming into an ensemble, and you're ultimately going to, in your own way, alter that chemistry.
Absolutely.
But also you got to, like, embrace what is existent.
Exactly.
You know you're not starting from scratch. It's a different experience when you're put on a team, like a brand new Herald team, and everybody's starting over together.
Right.
And we're building something from the ground, but, like, joining an established thing is something else.
It's weird, yeah. And it takes a hot second to get
your sea legs.
Yeah, exactly. And I was really worried because my team is all amazing improvisers.
Yeah, you got some great improvisers.
But I play a little different because I'm very much someone who plays, like, big characters. Mm-hmm. Like, there's never going to be a show that goes by where I don't play a lady. You know what I mean?
That's fun. There's never a show that goes by where I'm not an obese Southern man. So.
Oh, really?
That's
your go-to?
My go-to.
Now, here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I am like, okay, you always play, like, sort of a lady who has a purse who's just very upset about the world.
One of those cliche purse women.
Well, yeah, she always holds a purse like this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
As soon as you did that, I was like, I've seen him hold. For those of you, this is not a visual medium. He is clutching what seems to be a handbag-style strap, but it's over the shoulder
it's a brown leather purse,
of course,
is a shoulder
so
strap.
Practical.
Yeah, she's like a mom.
Of course.
I hook into that lady because, like, if I were a woman, I would
be
that lady. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The only reason I'm not that lady is because I was born gay in Texas and I had to get out of
Right.
to get out of it. So I am, like, really enamored with that character, and I really love playing her. And when I get into it, it's just, like, easy. It's going.
Putting on your favorite dress.
Exactly. But I have really – I have times where I'm like, you will not play a lady today. You will not play a lady.
I feel the same way about my big old dumb Southern men.
Yeah? Because you're like –
yeah.
I
get into this too much, but I love, there's just something, like, I know that point of view so well, and I don't even realize I'm doing it. Like, yeah. It's just my default. It's a point of view I understand. It's a simple person with a big heart that
yes.
makes their own dumb logic.
Yeah.
And is just a bulldozer of a human being, you know?
See, now I want to play that character real bad.
Do
right
it,
now.
Baby. Isn't it fun just to be, you know, and I grew up in West Virginia, so I think it's like, I'm trying to sympathize with these people that I hated and felt oppressed with so much, you know? I gotta find them.
Yes, you find the gooey center of them.
I love everybody's improv superhero, like what they would be. Like,
isn't that fascinating?
Isn't it? There was a guy who used to go to shows a couple years ago who was a cartoonist who would draw cartoons of improv shows. So he would draw... not you doing improv, not you, Jeff, but he would draw the brown purse. You know what I mean? He would draw you, and if we were in a spaceship, he'd draw the spaceship. Like, he would do what we are, which I think is also why, to go back to that object work, we are just a bunch of hipsters in flannel with black chairs at the end of the day with nothing there. We are, by setting up this environment, that's how we are being, we're communicating the world.
Exactly, and this is the only art form where you get to play someone who doesn't look like you.
That's my favorite thing about improv.
Me too. It's thrilling.
My favorite thing.
It's thrilling. That's why I play a lady so much, because nobody's going to cast me to play a lady.
Exactly. I'm never going to be a fat, dumb man.
Exactly.
No one's going to do that. I have glasses. I will be an assistant till I die. I will be a mousy little bitch with a clipboard who's anal.
Me too. I'm just a bitchy customer service representative, no matter what I play.
We are stuck as subservience.
It's so true.
Yeah.
But that's why improv is so great. And that's why, playing a character that is so not like you, but playing it in a really smart way is so fun and thrilling. Like so many times when you see an adult play a child, it's like the most grating, disgusting, gross thing.
Is.
But then, like, when you do play a child and you're like, oh my God, I just hooked into something that's really unique.
Mm-hmm.
This kid is exactly like my nephew because he's constantly kind of playing with his dick a little bit. And he's like, distracted, but like still like cool and like always wiping the sweat off of his forehead. Like, those specifics are so thrilling to me that you get to do them in improv land.
Specifics are what's funny to me, you know? I think, like, the thing I always say when I'm teaching is, like, a soda can isn't funny, but a chubby Shasta is, you know?
A chubby Shasta.
Have you ever been to a hospital and gotten one of those little fun size knockoff ginger ales that are called Shastas? But right, isn't it?
Yes.
Specifics. We need to see it.
Yeah.
You know, do you teach right now in New York?
I do.
Your schedule permits.
My schedule permits.
Great. What are some of we know that one of your pet peeves is object work, but what are some other major tenets you try to stress in classes? I know there's a set curriculum at UCB, but.
Well, I teach 101 and I teach that on purpose. I love teaching 101.
As opposed to accidental.
Right. Well, it's not like.
Teaching. Yeah, you get assigned.
It's not like I'm like, I want to teach. And they're like, take this 101.
Right.
I'm like, can I please teach a 101?
Because
I love, first of all, I like that class just in general because it's very much like, this. We're just learning. This is a safe environment. I love making it a really safe place where people can experiment and do weird stuff and not feel judged. Because that's what improv is all about, right? And so the thing that I'm really, really passionate about is object work is totally the number one, like way, way high.
That's great.
If you're going to drink a soda, have a straw. You know what I mean?
I love it. That one bends. You can't tell, but the straw he just used bend. It bent and it was white and it had those little red stripes on it.
It did. That's exactly true.
You communicated it. The power of improv.
Ah, that is so thrilling. So sometimes I'll ask, like, what were you eating in that scene? And they'll be like, oh, I don't know, steak. It's always steak. Like, whoever eats steak that much? But, and I'm always like, if it was steak, you would need to kind of cut that steak. And, like, you need to try and chew the steak while you're talking. And then, like, it's a big meaty meal that you're going to have to, you know, like, really feel.
Yeah.
And they're always just, like, sort of holding a thing.
And again, I just think, punching their faces.
Exactly. With an invisible fork. Exactly. Yeah. But you're never opening your mouth to take in the food.
Always talking as you're hitting yourself in the face.
Yeah, for some reason that really bugs me because it does take you out of the scene. Yeah. And also, it can add to the scene so much about, like, who is this person that orders steak at a restaurant? Like, that's a specific type of person.
Yeah, that's a power move.
Exactly. That's a high-status character. And then the other thing I'm really, 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 I will not let pass is when people bail. Mm. I cannot stand it. I know that sometimes people are doing it to save themselves. Yeah. But, like, I do feel like I set up a classroom that is safe enough that if you bail in it, I'm going to call you out on it and say, just commit. Yeah. I know you didn't want to play, you didn't want to make some silly face or whatever, but just try that silly face, say yes to that silly face, go with it. I mean, there are certain things, like obviously if someone is like, you know, pimping you into something
that you don't want to be pimped into,
like that's different. But if it's just like the scene organically went there, you had a complete hand in setting it to go
there.
And then
you just 180'd away from it because you got scared of this.
Or you were embarrassed that you were going to look dumb. Because truthfully, if you think about it, you look so much more dumb when you bail than when you just commit. That's why, like, when you play Hotspot, even though, like, there's, like, half of the class is so thrilled to play Hotspot.
I just started sweating when you said Hotspot because that's how much it scares me.
Right. And there's, like, half of the class is, like, I want to do it so bad. Yeah, I want to sing my Katy Perry Firework.
This is why I signed up. Exactly. I'm here to sing Katy Perry Firework.
There's no middle ground. The other half of the class is like, I want to poke my eye out just to have an excuse to get out of this room.
That's me.
I completely get that. And so my favorite part of doing that warm-up is forcing the people to commit to singing, Baby, You're a Firework, you know, and also that group supporting that person, because so much of improv, the reason people don't want to watch you is because they're nervous for you.
Yeah.
And they're nervous that you're going to fail. Yeah. And when you show any bit of, like, I am also nervous, I also think I'm going to fail, the audience is like, I'm out.
That's true.
I'm still in my chair, but I'm out. I'm covering my eyes.
Yeah,
I'm looking
I'm
at my watch.
I'm grimacing for you.
Exactly, because it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you talk to people, like, like, I remember when I first started out, people were like, I was so nervous to come, but you were good, you know?
I still get that from friends. Honestly, I was so scared. I was like, you've never made me laugh in real life. I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, people get really anxious because there's no guarantee with improv.
Yeah, and that's what makes the art form great. That's why you can't.
That's why it's magic.
That's why you can't film it.
No, and it people have tried.
Yeah.
But they're never going to get it. Were there any... were there any huge notes you ever got when you were starting out, or any huge notes just in general that you've gotten that have really stuck with you, or that you've stolen and now give to people?
That's so good.
Because I steal a lot from
people. You know the thing I used to get a lot? It's so funny because, like, I would either get, you don't play game at all, or you play game too hard. Those were the two things I got, which
those
I was like.
Very frustrating.
Yeah, I was like, but those are different.
But those are literally the two options of how I'm doing it wrong.
And I think what I realized is that, and this is a note I give often, is that you have to hit the game and then back away.
Mm.
And, like, the thing that really made me feel like I got it was, like, the idea of clapping. Like, that's when that the sound of hitting your hand is the game. And then, like, if you just barely take your hand away from your other hand and go again, it's a really slow, so like a very quiet clap.
Yeah.
But if you go back a little bit and then clap it, it's, like, so much louder.
Ooh, that's fucking great.
Yeah, that's how I feel about game, is that I often was like, okay, the game is I am whatever, like, blank. I'm the husband and everything I say gets on your nerves.
Right.
So I would just say... 1,000 things. And what I needed to do was go, I'm sorry, honey. I, you know what? Why don't I give you a back rub? I have these essential oils.
Ooh, I smell them. They're great.
Thank you. I want to just shoot them all over your face. You know what I mean?
Great, yeah. Absolutely. And there we have comedy gold, guys. This is a free podcast. Can you believe it? Oh, my God. Venmo Jeff Hiller. Find him on Venmo. You owe him for this.
It's just my email, y'all. Come on. Pay me.
But I don't know if someone told me this or this is the way that I visualize it as stair steps. Mm. Of like when you're hitting game, you're making a vertical move, and then you've got to make those horizontal moves of like environment, activity, establishing your reality. Uh-huh. You know, giving that's where the space is, so that you need to go that distance before you can can hike up again and get vertical and hit that game move.
Here's another thing that I find, because I taught a 201 too, and that's like
that
all
is
about
game town.
Yeah.
That's game city.
Yeah, and I was finding like people the biggest thing people said was like they didn't know when the unusual thing happened.
Oh, God bless.
I know.
My life is so strange. I don't know what's weird.
Or they wouldn't know. Yeah, it's kind of true. Like, yeah. I think it's because you're just up there and it's like so scary.
It is. It's really scary.
Because you're like, in that.
There is one game, and if I've lost it, I've fucked everyone up.
Right. But the crazy thing is that there's not just one game, you know? And, and that you might get the unusual thing, but you first have to say if this, then what, so that you know why it's the game.
Yeah, it's not just enough for it to be unusual. You've got to figure out why this thing is unusual and how it affects the world.
Exactly.
It's not. Because just, you know, weird shit after weird shit after weird shit isn't a game. Like, people think just, oh, if I just keep repeating this bizarre thing, it's like, no, how does this differ from the reality you've set up? How does it affect it? And why is this jack-off doing it?
Right. And it's not just the blank. I know that these are just things. But, like, so many of them, it would be like, oh, the
big laugh.
It's not
just laugh, quiet lawyer.
Right.
You know?
The big laugh was that she didn't talk much. So then you can't just have her not.
Right.
Not talking loud the whole scene. You have to explore that what else is true and why is that interesting that, you know, we have to heighten the stakes and stuff. I find that that's the stuff that's really, really complicated, which I get. Like, that's why level two is all game, because it's
so hard. Honestly,
it's complicated.
I feel like there should be.
It's not an easy art
it's
form.
Not an easy it's not an easy concept. I really struggled. I still struggle. I used to struggle a lot more, but I still struggle with like figuring out what is game, because it's like that. Sometimes I like to explain to students and to teams, it's like it's the title of your scene. If you just were trying to think of like what the scene is about, like that's just if you're boiling it down in a sentence, it can't be too complicated.
I say it's the fun.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah, what's the thing you like doing about it? That's good. That is very good.
Yeah, and that it doesn't matter if the fun is fixed. You know what I mean? Like that. In fact,
it can change.
Yeah. In fact, don't try and fix the fun.
Yeah.
We don't need to see if that couple where the guy does everything that annoys her gets divorced.
No.
We just need to see him do lots more.
We just need to take him to
things.
A Shoney's. Like we don't need to take him to divorce court.
Oh my God, your specifics are rolling off that golden tongue.
Yum yum yum. I did. Shoney's was like our because I grew up dancing. That was like our Sardi's. Like after the recital, everybody and Shoney's is like a shitty buffet thing. So we'd
that
all
was
go
our Sardi's.
We would go and like our Southern Hillbilly Sardi's, and you would know who was in the show, obviously, because we would never take off our makeup.
Right,
and we still have our hair and
were
like
you,
ring
like
leotards.
Ballet?
Yeah, ballet.
So
modern,
you'd have like a little top knot,
and a little bun head, and like the eyeliner a centimeter below the eye. You know, to make it seem like we've got doll eyes from the fucking auditorium of Woodrow Wilson High School. You know?
Exactly. Or did you ever do the thing where you put a white dot in the corner of your
eye? Yes, always. They taught us how to do it. And I, oh, God. But yeah, that was our, that's the genesis of that specific, for anyone tracking my specifics. And how did I know a lot about the chubby Shasta in hospitals? My dad was a doctor, and I used to sleep over during on-call time.
And get that chubby Shasta.
Gotta get it. What did your parents do?
My.
If you don't mind me asking.
What if I just got up and left? my dad is a mechanical engineer.
Whoa.
Who designed hospital beds for special care patients.
What a good thing.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. And then my mom was a CPA. They're both retired. Mm-hmm. But my mom was a CPA. But she didn't go back to school until she was 39.
Holy
shit. And then she became like a high-powered CPA. She was the comptroller of...
That's
Titan
insane.
Auto Insurance. Isn't that impressive?
That's very impressive.
I know.
Well, good stock here.
Good on her. Good on my
good
mom.
Good on her. I've never heard that before. Good on her?
Yeah.
That's great. Look at this. That's a lingual specific for those of you out there. Awesome. I think we're getting close to the end.
We're wrapping it up.
Is there anything you struggle with in improv still?
Hmm.
Is there any, are there any things, because as you know, you guys are improv vets out there listening, weekend teams, one of the things that comes with it is you don't normally have regular practices.
Right.
And there's no coach noting you afterwards, so you have to sort of like self-police a little bit or have those discussions. And is there anything like you find yourself that you're still working on? Because we're all still students of the craft. is there anything that you... that you ever, like, go into a show with a, like, I want to do this or I want to work on this or...
Well, I definitely ebb and flow. Like, like I'll be like, oof, mama's in a rut. You know what I mean? Then there are other times, like, right now, I think probably because I'm improvising 3 or 4 times a week, which I haven't done in
a
really long time.
That's great.
I'm like...
You're on fire.
Oof,
you got a groove.
I'm lubed. You know what I mean? But for me, I think because I have been doing it so long, and I never went... The longest I did it was when I was doing some musicals and, like, when I did Bloody Bloody, which was about, a year-long process of the off-Broadway and the Broadway version. I was away from improv for about a year. Mm-hmm. And so coming back after that was like, oh God, I'm so out of shape. So now that I've been doing it so much, especially since coming back to New York, I find that I can go into my groove instead of finding new interesting things. I think that's my biggest thing. That's why I don't want to play the lady with the purse anymore.
Got it.
That's why I want to do, like, that's why ASCAT is so fun because, like, all of a sudden they'll turn right and you'll be like, we're chasing that now. Oh, crazy. You know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, nice. And I guess last thing I suppose we'll discuss is, do you have any little pre-show rituals that you do?
Do you?
I used to. I'm recovering from an arm surgery. I've gotten an accident, fucked up a tendon. But
ooh, ouch.
I know. It was real bad. but this isn't about me. But I'm a survivor.
Oh,
okay, I'm
God.
Just saying it's very, it's been tough.
I'm so impressed. So, I just thought you were an assistant.
No.
Because of your classes. I thought you were my assistant.
I was, but no one asked the assistant what she does outside of work. She's in physical therapy 4 times a week. But I used to always do a handstand.
Oh, wow.
Before, to get that quick blood flow.
An inversion.
I love inversion. It's like a shot of espresso. And also, it's just like to get my upper body engaged, you know? Like, yeah. I like making sure the beast is warmed up. Because, you know, theater background, I like feeling like I'm actually warmed up.
Yeah.
So that does it for me. I like to just thoroughly stretch and do that.
Totally. I recently did a Rumple Teaser show that I thought started at 8 and actually started at 7:30.
Delicious.
So I walked in as they were on stage, and I just dropped my bag and walked onto the stage and did the show.
Uh-huh.
And I had ridden my bike there. I was, like, so sweaty. And, but it was fine. It actually turned out pretty good. But ideally, I like to take out my wallet and my keys and my phone, put them in my bag and put them in a secure place. And I like to have just like 5 or 10 minutes of shooting the shit with my team.
Mm.
Like, I really love at the curfew. It starts at 7:30, but we mostly get there. Rarely does anybody come in like at 7:25. Mm-hmm. And we talk about the week.
That's great.
We talk about, you know, their kids. We talk about whatever's happening. Usually,
that's right. A lot of the curfew has achieved that beautiful life goal of also creating a family. That's great.
Yeah, not me.
No, me neither.
All of them are parents and wildly famous.
But yeah, you like to connect with them beforehand. That's
the big warm-up for me. Yeah, I really love that, actually. And it feels like, right, even when I play on ASCAT, like, I love just being like, hey, Achilles, what's going on with you this week? Whatever.
Of Airwolf and Broad City Rider.
No, I was just choosing a name randomly. Achilles.
Oh,
I don't know anyone
different
named
Achilles. There is a name.
No, I'm totally joking.
You really
meant
convinced
him.
Me. Okay, good. I don't know. I felt compelled as this one-time host to explain things.
You're really guiding them through. I have to do this in just a minute. I'm very nervous.
You'll be fine. You'll be great. Awesome. So any last words? Any last things you'd like to say to the children?
The children. I like when people get bitten by the improv bug. I think that's what I'd say. Mm-hmm. I just had a student. I think this is okay to say. I think she would agree that this is an interesting thing to say. She told me on the first day of class, like, I'm just taking this because my commercial agents told me I had to. Which, of course, is like the worst thing to say to a teacher. Yeah. But it was also, I was like, oh.
Or this is court ordered.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, I get it. Mm-hmm. But then, like, I saw her be like, oh, yeah. And, like, aww. I saw her really sort of, like, I saw that she did this really great scene. And she, mm-hmm. By the end of the class, was like, I'm totally taking 201. Aww. And I was like, oh, I'm so excited that this is, like, a fun thing for you, that this is something that's exciting and interesting.
That's great. That's a wonderful thing to end on. And that was a long-form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Jeff Hiller will be your host. And thank you so much. Again, I'm Chet Siegel. And just, you know, I hope y'all get bit by that bug.
Oh, get bit by that bug.
Mm. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.